Ladies and gentlemen, the podcast is about to begin. Please take your seats and we'll get started. Good evening, everyone, and good morning or good afternoon whenever you're tuning in and listening to the podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us and sharing a little bit of your time. As always, I have with me in the studio the infamous Michael, my partner in crime, my partner in business, my partner in success, and whatever else he's willing to admit. Say hi, Mike.
In other words, what she's saying is I'm the John Oates to her being Daryl Hall. I was gonna say
well put, and then I bit my tongue.
Robin's the Baskin. You get the point here.
Not so, Mike. So thank you for tuning in, and you know, I want to say that the one thing that I loved about this blog and doing this podcast is it was one of those rare spontaneous inspiration blogs where the other night the movie Ali was on, and it's, if you haven't seen that movie, and I am going to turn the mic over to Mike in a moment to give a brief nutshell version of Muhammad Ali for any millennials that we have joining us or anyone who may not be a sports aficionado and not know about the greatest movie in sports history ever. But I loved it because the movie was on a few nights back, and the next morning I woke up, it was 4 a.m., I couldn't sleep, so I came to the laptop, and the blog literally just flowed out of me, it just jumped out, and so I think we all have those moments. They're rare, but they're precious, and that's what this is. So stick with us. I think this is actually a really important one. So, Mike, who is Muhammad Ali?
Muhammad Ali is considered one of the greatest, in my opinion, one of the greatest boxers that ever lived. He is the people's champ. It's plain and simple. For the younger crowds out there that are listening to this podcast, I encourage you to look up Muhammad Ali's footage. You know, go on YouTube, go on Vimeo, you know, go, even the Michael Mann movie that came out in 2002 that Will Smith played Ali. He's probably one of the greatest boxers that ever lived. What made it special was he was the greatest underdog in going into Rumble in the Jungle against George Foreman. He was 32 years old, Foreman being a lot younger, heavily favored, and Ali used one of the greatest strategies, which is called the rope-a-dope, and just tired out a very powerful Foreman to the point where he just had to blow on him and knock him over like a tree in the forest. I encourage you to watch this. It's probably one of the most phenomenal feats in sports history.
And don't just watch it. If you are in any type of business, no matter what it is you do, there's actually books. I was going to say a book, but there are several books out there about his psychological tactics, because everything is transmutable, you know, into business. Everything that's there, you can make a parallel into business or whatever it is you do, even into just life. And that's what's so great about it. Mike, why was he such an underdog? That's the point of this. Why was he such an underdog?
Ali had a mouth on him, okay? He played psychological games in and out of the ring. You know, with George Foreman, he called George Foreman Slow George. With Frazier, he would call him ugly. I mean, he would play mind games with people, but his psychological warfare, how we would call it, had a very positive impact for Ali, because opponents wanted to kill him. They wanted to shut him up. And because of that, they lose focus. And I think that's what Camille's going to touch on in a moment. Please.
He made it work. He made it work in his favor. And that's definitely one of my points. But what I was going for is at the Rumble in the Jungle in 74, this is a guy who had his title stripped. He was an Olympic champion. He won the gold medal for the United States, and he was the world heavyweight champion, and he was stripped of everything. We're certainly not going to dwell on the political aspect of whether or not it was right or wrong for him to draft the Dodge, but that is why he was stripped of his title. And the point of it is that going into this fight, he couldn't have been more of an underdog. He had everything, all of his glory was stripped of him, and all of a sudden he was the least favored in the fight. In fact, the bookies, or shall I say gambling consultants, actually had odds of 40-1 against him. Everybody really thought Foreman was younger. Everyone thought he was stronger. In fact, was he actually stronger?
Foreman in his prime is the equivalent of what Tyson was in his prime. Again, that could be argued, but Foreman was a powerhouse.
Exactly. And so the point is, this inspired me so much that I wanted to share the insights of how this plays into life and into business. And if you have read the blog, then you already know the premise, or even the preview paragraph to the podcast. If you haven't read the blog, then please do read it. If you have not seen the actual fight itself, we are going to include a very brief clip, an audio clip, at the end of the podcast. And I say that it's brief because that's how long it took for Ali to knock out Foreman with 30 seconds left in the eighth round in a fight that right up until the last few seconds, everyone was sure he was going to lose. So the point is, you don't have to be first. You don't have to be the strongest. You don't have to be the biggest. You don't have to be the wealthiest. What you do have to be is the most self-aware. And that's what Ali was. In fact, that's why he went to Africa, was because he, at the time, you know, after being stripped of everything, he felt that he lost a little bit of his self-awareness. So he went over to Africa and he got that back. And what happened was he developed his famous strategy. It was a strategy he had never used before. And he used this strategy at the Rumble in the Jungle, and he won. And that's, you know, the premise of this entire piece is about strategy, but there are a few things that go with it. So, you know, definitely stick with us. The most important thing is strategy. In business, in life, you don't have to have the biggest bankroll. You don't have to have the biggest brand. You don't have to have the biggest investors. You don't have to have the most experience, even really. You have to have the most self-awareness. And I think that that's the most important thing. Now, the rope-a-dope strategy, that's why there's so many important points about the strategy, and a strategy is never a one-sentence thing. So one of the first points is first mover advantage. It's not always the best advantage. I remember the Bobby Fischer story, don't move until you see it. Don't move until you see what? Don't move until you see strategy. You know, history is just littered with stories of great minds, from inventors, scientists, artists, business people, who never would, they wouldn't touch first mover advantage with a 10-foot stick on flames. You know, who is one of my business, always been one of my greatest business idols?
Richard Branson.
Yes. I have loved this man since I was in business school, since I was in MBA first year.
They still had rodeo phones.
Rodeo what?
Rotary phones. Sorry.
Rotary phones. Oh, you bastard. I'm going to get a parental advisory on this podcast. There were no rotary phones. Jerk. Anyway, Richard Branson was a dropout and a genius. Just a very quick example, Virgin Airlines, whether it's Virgin Atlantic or Virgin America, if you've ever flown that airline, after having flown more traditional airlines, you know that there is no other plane you'll ever want to set foot on again. And what happened? Well, he did something crazy. He stepped out of his comfort zone. At least this is the legend I'm told, and I'm calling it a legend because I admire it that much. He was stuck in an airport, really needed to get somewhere for a critical meeting, had to be there. Flight was canceled. He literally just raced to another part of the airport where they had private flights. He chartered a private flight, banking on his gut hunch that there were other people at the gate who also needed to be at that destination, no ifs, ands, or buts. So he chartered a private flight, went back to the gate, and called out to everybody and said, "Hey, I've got a private charter flight. It's leaving in a few minutes. Who wants to split the tab with me?" Lo and behold, charter flight is packed. There was not an empty seat there. And he got an idea. And that idea was to make the journey, the flight, just as good as, if not better than, the destination. And if you have ever been on a Virgin flight, you know that man succeeded. Virgin Records, the list goes on. He's going to be putting people into space at some point. But he didn't do first mover advantage because he stepped back and saw how everyone else did it wrong. And I don't mean that they failed, but they weren't doing it the best way that it could be done. And he was smart enough to sacrifice first mover advantage and see how, the experience of flying from one place to another could actually be so enjoyable that you wish there was more time left in your flight. And history is also riddled with hundreds of examples of people who did go for first mover advantage, thinking it was absolutely critical that they be the first, and they fell flat on their faces.
May I interject, Camille? Let me play devil's advocate for a moment. Try saying that five times.
No, you may not.
Now, for those that are listening, and I'm going to make this very brief, what example can you give of someone, a company, a business, where first mover advantage was to their advantage and they kept the market monopolized because of that? Who can you think of off the bat? I'll give you a hint. It's a book with faces on it.
Well, that's arguable. I mean, was Facebook really the first of its kind because it was preceded by MySpace?
But MySpace never reached the numbers that Facebook did.
No, it didn't. And so maybe that's an example of someone who moved first but didn't do it best.
Let me play devil's advocate again. The smartphones. Apple took advantage in 2007, 2008 with the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Samsung Galaxy, by most critics, is considered far superior, and they did not have first mover advantage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a perfect example then. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I myself, as you very well know, not a fan of Samsung. I won't touch anything Samsung. That's just me. That's just personal. So I'll leave that where it is. But yes, that is a perfect example, you know, of sitting back and saying, how can we do it better? And that's exactly what Ali did, because he, remember I said he, you need to be the smartest when it comes to self-awareness. Know your strengths, know your weaknesses, and know your opposition's strengths and weaknesses. Whether it is a competitor, whether it's a company, or whether it's the industry itself. It applies to everything. But the point is don't even shirk your weaknesses. Embrace your weaknesses. Embrace your opponent's strengths. Use them both in your own favor. And I know that that sounds crazy. I remember there was something that Gary Vaynerchuk said, and I have no idea if this was his original quote or not. I know he tends to quote a lot of other people, but it was a beautiful quote. The moment that you embrace your weaknesses is the very minute that your life goes on the offense. And Ali knew exactly what his weaknesses were. He was older. He was not in his prime. He was not as strong as he was when he was Foreman's age. And he knew exactly what Foreman's strengths were, what his own weaknesses were, and how to play those to his advantage. I'd be Captain Obvious if I said, you know, play your opponent's weaknesses against them. I mean, yeah, of course, that's what everybody thinks of first. But step out of your comfort zone for a minute and think of how he did this. And how he did this, the famous rope-a-dope strategy was, and by the way, he never used this before Rumble in the Jungle. It was the first time ever that he used this strategy. And what he did was he let Foreman hit him for almost eight full rounds. He let him punch after punch, and he took them. He deflected as many of them as he could, but he not only let Foreman continue hitting him, he encouraged him. And that's why I do recommend picking up one of the books about Ali's boxing career, because one of the things that he's most famous for, aside from his boxing, are his psychological tactics, his mind games. And that's how he won this fight. When Foreman was hitting him, he was calling him a sissy. He said, "What's this? I thought you could punch. They told me you could punch. I thought you knew how to hit." And so he was getting Foreman riled up. And the more riled up Foreman got, the more tired he got. Foreman was big. Well, they were both big. And so, of course, you know how boxers always, I don't know, Mike, maybe this is something that men understand, but boxers always hug in the ring.
Lock up.
Yeah, lock up. You know, I've been told it's what they do when they're tired. I always thought it just looked really weird when, you know, they're fighting each other and it looks like they're hugging. Well, Ali was leaning on Foreman. He was taking a micro break, if you will, but he was leaning his weight on Foreman, talking mind games into Foreman's ears, getting Foreman riled up, and tiring the guy out so bad that there were 30 seconds left in the eighth round. Foreman still throwing punches, and it was at about, I want to say maybe the 22nd mark, it was close to the end of the round. It only took literally about 7 or 8 seconds for Ali to turn the tide, knock Foreman completely down. I mean, flat out down. He did get up, but at that point, it was clear that he was not fit to fight anymore. They called the fight over, and Ali was once again the heavyweight champion of the world. And that was considered the greatest sports moment in history.
Well, one of them.
Well, actually, from what I read.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I went through quite a lot of articles. You know, it wasn't just a, you know, hip shot. It's considered the greatest moment in sports history. Now, of course, that's going to be subjective to every person and every sports aficionado, but...
So pretty much what you're trying to say to everyone, all the guys and gals out there in podcast world, is to not move until they see it. Be yeah. strategic about your plans and move at the right time and don't force anything.
And not just that, but the self-awareness, definitely. Don't think that your weaknesses are a bad thing. Don't think that your opponent's strengths are a bad thing. Use them in your favor. Another thing is adapt. Move out of your comfort zone. Ali had never used this strategy before in his entire boxing career. The rope-a-dope was brand new. No one ever even heard of it before the Rumble in the Jungle. And the thing that's so important about that is... actually, I think it was Richard Branson who said, if you're not innovating, you're dying. And I'm not getting that word for word, so don't quote me. But, you know, one of the things that I say is, you know, it's just a Camille-ism. Just because you're outside of your comfort zone does not mean you are in a bad place. That is so... I'm going to make a meme out of that. I don't... Is it meme or meme?
I don't know. I have a friend that uses a lot of memes, and I'm going to ask him if it's a meme or a meme. We'll poke that in the update.
Well, you'll see it in... on one of my... on all of my social media channels, because I'm going to memeify it or memify it. But just because you're outside your comfort zone does not mean that you are in a bad place. Maybe the best place that you could ever have asked to be. And I remember a Steve Jobs quote, we don't hire smart people so that we can tell them what to do. We hire smart people so that they can come in and tell us what to do. Again, quoting that loosely. But so many people never achieve that right strategy because they're so fearful of moving out of their comfort zone, or it's an ego thing. And one thing that I've been saying for about a decade now is, if you want to be successful, check your ego at the door. That is just so critical. And I will admit, I've had many clients who I've seen say that they need, you know, fresh blood, fresh ideas. They want to bring in new people. And they bring in these brilliant new people, and then they tell them what to do, give them instructions, and there's no innovation at all. And that's the point of strategy. You know, I went so far in my blog as to say that thus far, my record is undefeated in that respect. And not trying to toot my own horn there, but it is. I was fortunate enough to have a former supervisor who eventually became a client. She was so adamant about strategy that she just pounded the definition in my head. And it became the cornerstone of everything that I've ever done for a client in the last decade. And that's the whole point of it. So you don't really have to be the biggest, the baddest, the richest, the smartest. You need to have the right strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, and... Mike, do you want to add? I have one more point. But
go ahead, please.
There's a question. This question was asked of me, and I think if you're a geek like me, it's almost a little bit spicy. What comes first, budget or strategy?
Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do is we're going to let our audience answer that with the hashtag ForteBumbaye. And I'm going to spell that out. BUMAYE. Got you speechless.
Well, they could just tag me.
Well, yeah, with the hashtag.
Right.
So, please feel free to answer that question with the hashtag ForteBumaye. It's B-U-M-A-Y-E. I actually looked that up.
And for anybody who doesn't know, when Ali went to Africa to rediscover his self-confidence, his self-awareness and whatnot, he was jaw-droppingly shocked to find that a bunch of people on the other side of the world were chanting Ali Bumaye. And he turned to somebody, he says, "What does that mean?" And they said, "It means Ali, kill him." And the point of that is, he was shocked that all these people believed in him because he had forgotten how to believe in his own self. And when he saw that, literally tears came from his eyes. And
that's very true, because a lot of business people out there that are listening don't have enough confidence in themselves to say, is my idea going to work?
Yeah, or they've strayed away from strategy for so long that confidence has been, you know, withered away, and they've lost that fire. And that's how Ali got it back. I think that's one of the reasons that the whole story is so inspirational, and that is why there are books written about his psychological tactics in sports, and they're all applicable to whatever it is you do, from having the best yoga studio on this side of the country to being a Fortune 500 company. So I do want to say one trick answer to that question. What comes first, strategy or budget? The answer, in my opinion, is branding. But I'm not going to get into that. That's for another blog. It's for another podcast. I want you to please send me your questions. Disagree with me. I love it when I'm wrong. Correct me. Send me your ideas, your thoughts, whatever. Hashtag ForteBumaye or tag me. You can find me everywhere. Just Google Camille Forte. I'm Online Forte on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, you name it. But if you don't know where to start, start at Google, because I'm really not a hard person to find.
And you can also find her at the local bowling alley, hitting the gutter balls and bowling.
You son of a... You know, I would argue with that, but my average at bowling is actually a 42. I kid you not, a 42.
Blind people have better scores than that, ladies and gentlemen.
It's true. He's not exaggerating.
But again, like how Camille stated, you could find her and go ahead and answer this question at the hashtag ForteBumaye. That is BUMAYE.
With the Forte in front of it.
Yes, with the Forte.
ForteBumaye. And just reach out. I want to hear from you.
Again, we thank you so much for giving your time and energy to listen to this podcast. This is Michael.
And Camille. And don't forget, just a few seconds longer, listen to the ending of this fight. Listen to how quickly doubt turned into shock, turned into revival, and a third time world championship. It's absolutely amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in and sharing your time with us. Take care.
Right hand by Pullman was not effective to let the man punch himself out. 30 seconds left in round 8. Very even fight. Ali, a sneaky right hand. Another sneaky right hand. This time he works over the shoulder of Pullman.
That was no phantom punch, and he's down and out.
That was not a phantom punch.